Good evening and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Hour two of the broadcast here on this Thursday, the 24th of April, 2025. I'm your host, Richard Carey. And this is Beyond the Official Narrative. Here with our guests, co-hosts from the UK for this UK Thursday, as it turns out, Graham Sutherland from up in Inverness, Scotland. And in jolly old England, we have Mr. Paul Edward Stevenson joining us, both live, and good of them to be live from the UK at such an hour. So gentlemen, maybe just to shift, you know, to be sure we get in a good a bit of variety here. I hear that, our most recent Pope has died, and, you know, we're getting a lot of responses, obviously, out there. I mean, from what I know, he's a Jesuit, and, okay, yes, he was not Zionist leaning, but he was certainly very, very communist leaning, including a lot of these like clergy-esque sort of agendas, if you will. It just sounds like he had a really warped past in some of his associations. I heard some people claim associations with people related to even pedophilia, and I never found him appealing. It always seemed like it was a far cry from any of the prior popes, and me not even being Christian. I'll turn it over to Graham first. Graham, what do you have to say here?
It's an interesting point. First and foremost, it's important to make the point that this Pope, this late Pope now, was a Jesuit, and he was the first Jesuit Pope we've had, and he was very different. He's very different from... His style, everything about him was very different from other popes. He made a big show. If you cast your mind back to when he first took the stage, he made a big show about humility. And he was washing people's feet, which was something that Christ did. He washed the disciples' feet, famously, and dried their feet with his hair. And this is what the Pope was doing, you know, to try and emulate Christ. But it was a kind of mockery, really. It really was, because there was all sorts of nefarious stuff going on at the Vatican. And I've always said the Vatican are not Christian. They are not Christian. They're a satanic pedophile cult pretending to be a religion. That's what they are. And as I said earlier on, actions speak louder than words. If you just look at the actions of the sort of bishop level in the Vatican, and bishop level and above in the Vatican, it's vile. It's not Christian. It's, if anything, it's Antichrist.
Paul?
Well, I never really paid that much attention to them, because in many ways the whole thing is just an abomination. And he was many things, but the problem was you couldn't describe him as a Catholic, and he's the Pope, but he didn't adhere to any of the doctrines that Catholics adhere to. And really, he is since Vatican II, the Catholic Church has just been impotent. It hasn't been what it was before. I mean, there's a guy who supported gay marriage and female priests and all sorts of things. Whatever you think of the Catholics, there's doctrines within the Catholic Church that real well-meaning Catholics take seriously, and he didn't represent any of that. Now, you could call him a humanitarian, perhaps, in some way. I don't know about too much about his past or whether he was involved in pedophilia or not. He was supportive, apparently, of the Palestinians, but, should we really laud him for that? I mean, anybody, apart from these hypocrite Christian Zionist types, and, of course, the Jews and the Zionists themselves, who don't seem to have any moral compass, or if you were to be a little bit more kind, that those who support this mass slaughter of the Palestinians are just totally indoctrinated by Zionist propaganda. Well, the rest of the world, you know, you can lower it down just to the lowest common denominator of humanity, where we can agree with people that we wouldn't have anything else in common with who go out supporting the Palestinians, because it's, like I said, you only have to be a human being. But, you know, for anybody who's serious about Catholicism in any way, and there are those people out there, a lot of them actually, he has not represented those people, you know. He has been the pinnacle of Vatican II, you know. He's just taken it to like the next step, you know. It's like he's like you said, he's almost like a communist, he's very progressive, but it doesn't represent anything. Whatever you think of Catholicism or Christianity, it has certain beliefs and doctrines, and he did not represent any of those things, you know. So it's ironic. You know, he was a lot of things, but he wasn't Catholic.
Rob?
Yes, I would totally agree with that. I mean, I've known some Catholics in my time that were better Christians than I am. You know, I have to say that. I hold my hands up to that. Far better Christians than I am. And, you know, they were self-proclaiming Catholics. The Pope... some of his stances, like embracing all the other faiths, you can't do that. Christianity, at its core, is exclusive. There's only one way to God, and that's via Christ. That is the core belief of Christians. Jesus himself said, "The only way through to the Father is through me." You know, I mean, that's very exclusive. That excludes Muhammad. It excludes Buddha. It excludes everyone else. There's only one way to God, and that's Christ. Well, the Pope contradicted that, you know. So if a Christian Pope is contradicting Christ, as Christ said himself, if you're not for me, you're against me. It's obvious by his words, by his actions, the Pope has put himself in a diametrically opposed position to Jesus Christ. So, you know, and, you know, full stop. That's all that needs to be said.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, by the way, just for the sake of not to be publicly correcting you, but I don't think Jesus said, if you're not for me, against me. When some of the disciples were casting out demons, he said, you know, there's these other people that he saw. Sorry, Graham, it's important, because I don't think Jesus did say that. But remember the time there was other people casting demons out, and the disciples came back and said to Jesus about it, and he said, well, if they're not against us, you know, don't... you know, don't rebuke them. I think he actually said something like, if they're not against us, you know, they're for us, maybe. Something, I don't know. But maybe he did say what you said, but I that's what I remember. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you're right, Graham. This is what I mean. Yeah, you know, no one says you have to agree with Christian doctrine. There's a lot of people out there don't like Christianity and its doctrines, but Jesus did say, you know, no one comes to the Father except through me. And if you would think that if you're a Catholic, let alone if you're the head of the Catholic Church, the Pope, that you might be able to sort of espouse those doctrines. But you're absolutely right. He was a multi-faith guy. It's just like, you know, you have your way to God, and they have their word to God, and sure, we're all the same, really. So he removed the whole spine and the backbone out of Christianity, you know? He watered it down where it was just unrecognizable as anything, which is why I don't pay attention to the guy. And, you know, I remember when the early Christians, before they realized what Jesus was about and who he was and about the kingdom and everything else, they were like, well, when are you going to restore the kingdom? We've acknowledged this is the most likely the Messiah. So now will you restore the kingdom? And so the early Christians were essentially Zionists in a way. You know, they were like, they wanted a political kingdom where the Jews would rule, and that's what they were waiting for when the Messiah came. And Jesus had to gradually tell them, well, you know, that's not your idea of the Messiah and my idea are very different. I'm not interested in your political ambitions. By the way, this is what makes it. At the time, you could excuse the early Christians. They've been brought up in this, you know, temple system, and they had their own ideas. But 2,000 years later, you might think that since we have the New Testament and everything we know about Christianity, there should be no excuse for the oxymoron of a Christian Zionist. I mean, what is wrong with these people? You know, we have enough information now to know that there shouldn't be such a thing as a Christian Zionist. It really is an oxymoron. But, you know, the Pope, I heard the other day, the Vatican, I think they've got their own the State Department sort of foreign minister or something. I mean, this is, you know, Jesus set up a spiritual kingdom, and there they are, you know, with their Vatican and their political positions, like it's like, you know, like the White House and the State Department or something. I forget, it was like, I heard someone talk about, you know, whether the foreign minister or the Vatican State Department, whatever it was, it just sounded like it was a government. So, I mean, you know, I hate to, because I was brought up a Catholic and my early, you know, spiritual journey started as a Catholic. So I'm loath to, like, you know, condemn it. And I still know some good Christians. But even as a young man, you know, I used to, you know, Jesus used to come. You'd be hearing these stories where Jesus would be coming up against the Sanhedrin, and they're all wearing their garments and they've got their incense and they've got their gold everywhere, and it's all hypocrisy. And then as a child, I used to be hearing these stories that Jesus, you know, born in the stables and was a carpenter and was poor and all the rest of it. And then you're looking around and all the marble and the gold chalices and all these. And the Orthodox Church is even worse, nearly. It's like there's just so much bells and whistles and gold and marble. And none of that's got anything to do with Jesus Christ at all, you know. But it seems to be, you know, that the Christians developed their own kind of almost pharisaical type system that Jesus was in conflict with through the whole of his ministry. And the same Sanhedrin called for and basically pressurized Pontius Pilate and the Romans into killing the man. So I mean, I don't know why more Catholics don't have that conviction. Did you never feel that? I don't know where you were brought up a Catholic, but it's just I don't want to see all these garments and hats the bishop wears and all. It's all nonsense, you know.
You mean religious garb?
Yeah, just all of it. Yeah, and it's just like some of it. Where do they get these things from?
Well, I believe Graham has identified as being brought up as a Protestant. To correct,
right.
for one. Right. As another note, though, I mean, Graham's comments about the Vatican, Paul. I mean, you comment on his and agreed with him about the Pope. The most recent Pope, but what about his comments on the Vatican and how and the corruption therein?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, the problem is the higher you go up the ladder with these things, you know, the more corrupt they get. I mean, I would imagine there's probably people, cardinals, bishops, people in the Vatican now as we speak who will be selecting the next Pope. I would dare say some of them are probably atheists, honestly. Or Satanists or whatever. I mean, you know, and they have persecuted spiritual priests who have tried to get back to Christian doctrine. And when they start teaching Catholic doctrine, the pressure comes, you know. The pressure comes. They start to get persecuted by the church itself. Very much like the Sanhedrin. Very much like the Jews back in the day of Jesus' day. It's a real shame, but I think there's a lot of people out there who are thirsty and hungry for the Catholic Church to represent them again and to stop all this nonsense, because outside there's a lot of Catholics outside the West, and this whole woke thing, this cultural Marxist thing, whatever you want to call it, that we've experienced in the West, Christians around the world, Catholics around the world, they're family-oriented people. The South Americans who are coming into, a lot of them coming into America, are much more serious Catholics. There's Catholics in India, I went to mass around here recently, and I was staggered at the amount of people were there. They were all brown people, the Indians and some Africans, no white people. But these are people who are not interested in these kind of doctrines of demons, as the Bible calls them. They want Catholicism to be Catholicism. They don't. They're not confused about men and women. They don't want women priests. They don't want gay marriage. It's an offense to them. So there's a lot of people, abortion. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that want Catholicism to go back to what it once was. And listen, if it did, you know, I went to mass the other day because, you know, some of the Protestant churches are just as bad. Okay, they don't have the religious garb, but some of the nonsense that they teach, man, I left the local church here, a Protestant church, just a clown show, complete clown show. And I thought it's probably doing you more harm than good than being involved here. So I actually went to mass, and the place was packed. I stood there, you know, because and then we went back on Good Friday, and it was pointless because we couldn't get in. And so I said to my son, I said, nah, let's go. We'll go and watch some on television or something, because we're not even going to be able to, you know, we were literally not even at this point in the back of the church. We were outside on the street. And when we tried to get in, someone was like, you can't come in. There's nowhere to go. The place is packed. I said, well, isn't there somewhere to stand around the side? They said, no, there's people standing around the side. So we left because there was just too many people there. And these are people, I think, who are not interested in the sort of stuff that the most recent Pope is espousing. You know, these places have become synagogues masquerading as churches. That's what they are.
Yes. Yeah. Like I said earlier on, I see the Vatican as a satanic pedophile cult, just pretending to be a religion. I'm a bit cynical about it. However, just last week, I was flicking through the channels on the TV, and I paused briefly on a priest, you know, giving a sermon. And I thought, you know, I was kind of cynical. I thought to myself, oh, I wonder what crap he's going to be speaking. But I listened to him, and the more I listened to him, the more I realized he was actually speaking the truth. He was a godly man. He was a holy man. And he was basically begging his congregation to get back to basics, you know, to get back to the basics of Christianity and the tradition of the Catholic Church, which was focused on Christ. And I'm very surprised, you know, to hear this guy saying this, and he was also hear this priest saying this, and he was also saying that, you know, unless they focus on the person of Christ, there is no Christianity. It's just it's a hollow shell. And I thought, gosh, he was giving a stronger sermon than I'd heard many a Protestant given.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, I have met them. There are spiritual Catholics out there. You know, see, when we're talking about the institution of the Catholic Church, I think we're entitled to condemn it. But at the same time, I have met some very, you know, holy, spiritual, serious Catholic people, and also Catholic priests. Interestingly, yeah. they've been priests for a long time. They haven't went up the ladder.
yeah,
you know, and then I like you say, I've been to Protestant churches where it's just a pile of nonsense. And so it's very frustrating right now to be a Christian of any sort, really. You know, you can criticize. I guess you can criticize Islam for whatever, but they don't seem to have this crisis. They seem to be, you know, take it seriously. You know.
Well, yeah, but the Islam's having the problems as well. I don't know if you've heard this.
Are they going liberal too? No.
Well, Iran has closed 50,000 mosques. 50,000. Which is an incredible amount of mosques to shut. You're talking about millions of people. And there's been a huge Christian revival. They call the country Persia. They won't call it Iran. And they call the country Persia, and they identify with the teachings of Jesus Christ, and reject Muhammad. Yeah. I didn't
see
that.
Yeah, well, you know, after the Bolshevik Revolution, before the Bolshevik Revolution, there was apparently a lot of backsliding in the Orthodox Christianity, and you can see it in some of the writings and of some of the writings during the Bolshevik period. Solzhenitsyn talked about it, that they believed that there were those that believed that because they had backslidden so much that the whole Bolshevik Revolution, you know, and what had befallen them was a judgment from God. And, you know, the Orthodox Church is very strong and serious in Russia right now, which is another reason why you have, on a spiritual level, the satanic West, particularly, you know, the Jewish-dominated West, has it in for Russia, because they can't be having, you know, the Orthodox Church. In fact, there was a guy who came out a couple of years ago and actually said as much, and he was a Jewish guy, I forget his name, Tucker Carlson was talking about it, who was saying, we can't allow, it's intolerable for the rise of the Orthodox Church in Russia. Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, but anyway, yeah, the Pope, rest in peace, you know, who knows what goes on with these people, but he'll be judged fairly, and but yeah, I mean, he may have been a lot of things, but he wasn't Catholic, so there we are. Hopefully the Catholic Church will, you know, return to something which is akin to Catholicism, you know, whether you like or agree with Catholicism or not. At least let's hope, let's let it be Catholicism. I'm sick and tired of everything being in name only, you know? Everything's in name only.
And at the end of the day, it wasn't Christ that invented any denomination.
No, well, this is, you know, it's a quandary, really, within the church. I mean, I was saying to a friend of mine who was talking about Christian things the other day, I think also part of the problem with Christianity is that Christians end up, and I understand it to an extent, but they end up in very, sometimes detached from, they forget the world that they're living in. You know, for my money, there's just far too many Christians debating other Christians. Let's have a debate about soteriology. You know, are the Calvinists right or the Arminians right or whatever? And I know it's very interesting and it's important. Oh, let's have a debate about eschatology. Are you a premillennialist or an amillennialist or a, you know, and then you go in, and or a postmillennial, and, you know, and it just seems to be an endless debates between Christians. And, you know, and it's one of the reasons that I like doing this radio show, because it keeps me aware also of the world and have perspective, because I just think Christians disappear up there, you know what, sometimes. And
my late dad was a very strong Christian, and he was also very wise. And I remember him, one of his expressions that he used to say is that God wants spiritual fruits, not religious nuts.
Yeah, but you know, it's important that the church edifies itself, of course, and iron sharpens iron and all that, but. You know, it's almost like you will have Christians who basically almost, you know, unless they have to because of their work or something, that they never interact with anybody who's not a Christian. And so, you know, even the monks and all that, Jesus said, Father, I pray that you don't take them out of the world, but you leave them in the world, but you keep them, you know, you keep them sort of spiritual or whatever. But then you had the whole monastical movement where it's a lot easier to be in quote spiritual when you're not living in the world and dealing with everything. You just isolate yourself, and it's a lot easier to just get away from it all. And you're like, yeah, I'm very spiritual. I get up and I listen to my monk's music and my incense and everything else, and so I don't have to get, you know, triggered by anything in the world or whatever.
This reminded me of another one of my dad's proverbs or expressions. He used to say that some folk in the church have become so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good.
He said what, sorry?
Some folk in the church have become so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good.
Well, that's the thing, you know, exactly. I mean, like I said, I forget the exact quote, but Jesus said, I pray, Father, you don't take them out of the world, but you keep them in the world. It was stuff like that. But, you know, I say this as someone who, believe it or not, wanted to join the Jesuits when I was younger. I didn't know anything about the Jesuits, but I liked the idea of getting up at 6 in the morning and living in a room with a little desk and a little wardrobe and a bed and a cross on the wall. And I'd get up in the morning. I still kind of like the idea of the structure of it, but we'd get up in the morning and we go to breakfast and we say our prayers and then we have mass and then we go to the library and then we maybe do some gardening and then we have lunch and whatever. And, you know, in more recent years, you know, apart from anything to do with Jesuits politically or corruption or whatever, you know, I'm glad I didn't, because I think I would have grown out of it. I think it's kind of something which is akin to spiritual immaturity. Not that I'm spiritually mature, but I think I would have grown out of that and recognized that it was an attempt to escape from the world, you know? So it would be easier.
Yeah, that's right. They're a kind of strange bunch of Jesuits, but they've certainly got influence, and they've got universities and schools all over the place. George Bush went to a Jesuit university.
Yeah, and again, I'm sure there's some Jesuits who are well-meaning. I mean, they do some good stuff, but I think it would have been, you know, it's easier if you just take yourself out of the equation and, you know, you just sort of isolate yourself and you don't have to deal with a lot of stuff. It's harder when you have to just deal with things and the world the way it is and warts and all.
I see them as a kind of offshoot or branch of the Masonic cult.
I probably are. I mean, these things are all very linked.
Yeah, it's just a connection I make in my mind. You know, I see them like just another group, like a Templars or whatever.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I do struggle whenever I, you know, it's a challenge for me when I go to. When I mix with other Christians, when I went to that church up there, I mean, get into arguments and all sorts of stuff. You know, I just, you know, I couldn't sit on my hands with it. I mean, I did for a while, but all the nonsense around COVID and people in there who are not Christians, who shouldn't even be in the church, putting pressure on the pastor to close the place and wearing masks and open windows. People who are not serious people. And then the pastor himself, he's, don't start me. And,
I know it was what a fiasco.
And there's so much stuff going on, and there's so this whole Judaizing is so prevalent in the church today as well. You know, it's which is unfortunate. You know, with the whole Israel thing and the whole deception there, and just the biblical ignorance and the acceptance of dispensationalism and things like that, which is the you know, the foundation, the theological foundation for, in quotes, foundation for Christian Zionism and the obsession with end times and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, so many of the pastors are dispensationalists and they've never heard any other views. And so when they're presented with another view, they think you're some sort of dangerous heretic sent by Satan.
We'll be right back, folks. Stick around.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less value its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar, has tanked. It's worth nothing. And yet gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The Civil War was a bitter and brutal conflict, but perhaps never more so than in the state of Missouri, where the wounds of the Kansas Border War still festered. The inhumanity of the conflict was punctuated with Union war crimes, especially in the eastern Ozarks. There, civilians were targeted in an effort to subjugate the fierce fighting men battling Union forces of the region. As a result of this policy, 27,000 Missouri citizens were killed during the war. Best-selling author Paulette Giles had this to say about Blood in the Ozarks. There are a great many books on the guerrillas in Missouri during the Civil War, and almost all of them have to do with the bushwhackers in central Missouri, Quantrell, Frank and Jesse James, Bloody Bill Anderson, and others. Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy is a much-needed look at the war in southeast Missouri. Purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks at foothillsmedia.net. That's foothillsmedia.net to purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks.
Are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey with Graham Sutherland and Paul Edward Stevenson. I don't know if we'll have time to talk about the UK and global economies, but we're discussing Jesuits and dispensationalism. Graham, did you have any feedback for Paul?
As regards what? The Pope?
Oh, what's that now? I mean, just in general. I don't know. Well, Paul was talking about a lot of dispensationalist preachers as well, kind of maybe losing sight of the essence, the point of things. Was that where you were going, Paul?
I felt tempted to tell you a little story. There was a guy once, he came round to our house when my dad was still alive, and my dad was helping him basically get off the drink. The guy had a bit of a drink problem, you know, and he'd kind of stopped drinking, but you know, he was struggling with some of the big questions, you know, what is the meaning of life and all this stuff. And he'd shown a bit of interest in Christianity, and he was having a debate with my dad. He was having a discussion with my dad. My dad invited him over for dinner, basically, and the guy was saying, "Oh, but what about these people? What about these people in the church that do this in a way, you know? And what about them? And what about the Methodists and all that? And my dad just waited till he finished talking, and he said, listen, Christianity is between you and Christ. It doesn't matter about this people here or that people there. It doesn't matter about the Methodists. It doesn't matter about the Catholics. It doesn't matter. Christianity is about your soul and Christ and your relationship to Christ. No one else matters. When you go and stand before him, he's not going to say, oh, what did you think of your next door neighbor? Or what did you think of the people at the church? Or how, you know, what did you think about the people pretending to be Christians at your work? None of that nonsense. It's just your soul. You know, nothing else. You're naked before Christ on the day of judgment. And the guy just basically shut up because he's seen the logic in it.
I see we have some callers for you gentlemen, and very nice. Thank you for that, Graham. First up, we have Joe in Florida. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. We have, two UK panelists here for you, Graham Sutherland and Paul Edward Stevenson. What's on your mind, Joe?
Hey, Richard and Gus, happy Easter, I have to say, to all of you. Good to hear Paul and Graham. My kinsmen there, Irish and Scotch brothers. Yeah, you know,
you got Robert the Bruce and Father Ted here.
Yes. What a team! What a panel! And I have to say, Richard, great analysis from these guys tonight, especially about Russia, which is the thing I wanted to mention at the top here. So it's funny because when you listen to Trump, here's the thing. I got to always remind myself that, first of all, I think he thinks that being president of the United States is like hosting a TV show. And then he's hiring people. He's doing things like, so when it comes to the war, now he ran on so-called ending the Ukraine-Russia war, which is a great thing. It's one. I might be the prime reason I did vote for him. But he doesn't seem to understand. So, you know, like I remember this from the first administration. When he did good things, the things that I agreed with, then he'd always say, well, you know, this is because Obama did this, and this is the opposite of what Obama did. Now, he's doing the same thing with this war with Biden. What does he say? He says, well, this war started under Biden, right? And it wouldn't have started if I was still president. Okay. So from Trump's brain, right, the problem with this war is that it should never have started, right? And it's all about Joe Biden. And you know, this is a very kind of a weird way of looking at it, right? So, but that's a progress over what we had, which was obviously the bloodthirsty war criminal Joe Biden feeding hundreds of millions of billions of dollars. So it's an improvement, but even still, it's a little bit weird because he's playing himself like he's somehow a referee in this Ukraine. I call it, you know what I call it, Richard, the Jewish war against Russia, right? Ukraine and Russia. It's a Jewish war against Russia. It's always been. And Trump is playing himself like he's a referee, but what kind of a referee is still giving millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to one of the people in the war? And I think it's a disconnect where he's talking about, well, it has to end. But at the same time, I mean, is he aware that we're giving them still millions of dollars, Ukraine war criminal Zelensky and his Ukrainian mafia? We're still giving them money? I mean, sometimes it's very frustrating. Like, if he only had a moment and he thought about it, a referee is supposed to be like, you know, partial. I mean, impartial. And we're not really impartial. We haven't been. So anyways, it's frustrating. But the one good thing I heard, there was a clip earlier today that they had. Some reporter asked Trump tonight, I guess in the press conference, well, would you think of stopping Patriot missiles to Ukraine if the U.S. decided to, like, pull out of trying to negotiate a ceasefire? Or what are they saying there? They're fed up with trying to get a ceasefire, so he's going to pull out or going to stop focusing on it. The reporter said, would you stop Patriot missiles to Ukraine? And Trump's answer was, we'll see. Now, to me, that's an improvement, okay? Because maybe that's what we need. We need Trump to sort of flick the switch like Donald, hello, You have all the power in the world to end this war, and you could end it not by playing a referee, but by stopping sending money to the war criminal Zelensky. What do you think?
Graham?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting point you raise. You've got to remember that he did see himself as a referee to some extent, because there was obviously, before the war even started, there was billions went under the table. You know, Biden right. was obviously getting paid off, and there was a lot of shady stuff going on, obviously under the table. And the other point is, America's making a fortune off of the arms they're selling to Ukraine. And, half of them don't even reach the battleground. They go missing. They get blown up in warehouses. They get blown up in trains. I can't remember. Somebody said it was like 40% only reaches the battlefield. The other 60% disappears or gets blown up. America's still making money, and all of that missing pieces, they're still making money. So, you know, and Trump's a businessman, so he must feel, to some extent, he must feel torn, between his ideals and his sense of business.
Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's ostensibly perplexing that, you know, on the one hand, you're talking about peace and this frustration and getting people to, you know, round the table to negotiate a peace deal. All the while, there's still weapons and intelligence being provided and everything. Now, unless this is just the remaining tranche of what's left that Biden sent, and both with military aid and money, and then when that runs out, maybe Trump's not going to give them any more. I don't know, or maybe he's scared that if he doesn't keep it going to some extent that. You know, and the whole thing collapses, that he'll get blamed for it. But, I mean, this is why he should have washed his hands of it at the start and been clear and said, listen, that last package Biden gave to these people, that's the last. We're not getting any more. We're getting out of there. We want peace. It's going to be very difficult because these Zelensky is not willing to give an inch. The Russians are in a very strong position where they don't have to give an inch. So we're not getting involved with it. This is Biden's war. When that money is used up, when that ends up in some offshore bank account of Zelensky and his friends, we're done. We're not sending any more. That's what he should have done. Tucker Carlson suggested that as well. And the other guy, what's his name? I forget. He was once in the Trump administration. He said that from the start. Steve Bannon.
Bannon McGregor?
Steve and, Bannon. Steve Bannon. So, you know, I don't know why Trump has even got involved thus far, but we'll see. I mean... but the other point is, this idea is the absurdity of sort of claiming that they're somehow neutral peace brokers. I mean, even Rubio himself came out about 3 weeks ago and said this is a proxy war between the United States and Russia. And,
right.
You know, and yet they're presenting themselves as kind of neutral peace brokers. And I understand it's a different administration, and Steve Witkoff from that aspect of the Trump administration seemed to be quite willing to recognize Crimea and the four oblasts as Russian territory, and that they're not going to, you know, Ukraine's never going to join NATO, which is pretty much what Trump, what Putin wants. But then he's been pulled in a different direction from those who are, Russia phobic and invested in the usual Western interests in terms of, warmongering and keeping everything going. So it really all depends on Trump, what sort of decision. He needs to have the backbone to just have the courage of his convictions and don't mess around with it.
Yeah, but maybe I'm too much of an optimist, I know maybe, but here's another scenario, which I really think is a possibility. So, you know, the genius, Vladimir Putin, right? Okay, what has he done? Well, we see, for instance, he even offered did you notice the Easter ceasefire? Okay. Here's a man who's a real Christian, okay? I happen to believe he's really a Christian. Not that he's a saint, but he has some sensibility of that, offering a ceasefire on Easter, okay? And what does the Jewish terrorist criminal Zelensky do? They violated that ceasefire almost 5,000 times, okay, in less than 48 hours. They didn't even acknowledge it, which didn't surprise me, because they have a history. They have been ethnically cleansing Christians. A year ago, this Jewish war criminal Zelensky sent a missile into the Donetsk Cathedral on Orthodox Easter and fired it on the Easter holiday. So it didn't surprise me that Zelensky violated this offer of a ceasefire. But the thing is, here's the scenario which I think is a good possibility. Facts on the ground, right? Putin is not far away from total victory. Okay, well, who is going to stop him? The Frenchmen? Give me a break, right? The French and the British? I'm not going to hold my breath for them, right? They're going to defeat Vladimir Putin? I don't think so. On their own? I don't think so. So then the facts on the ground are going to be, guess what? You're done. And what does Trump do? We know what Trump does. He invites Putin to the U.S. and congratulates him. That's what he should do.
Well, I see we have a lot of callers in the queue there. Well, thank you so much, Joe. Let's go to Bill.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Joe. Let's go to Bill in Kentucky. Bill, hey, welcome to the show. And what is on your mind, Bill? Bill in Kentucky, waiting for the magic gatekeeper sound.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. There you are. Yes, sir.
Yes, I just turned it on, I guess. But you remember... The two guys that are with you, they said, we're talking about, you know, like Protestant, Catholic, and Orthodox, and whatever, regardless of what your affiliation or denomination, this sums it up, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. I believe that would sum up every bit of that. And Paul, you were talking about, you were wanting to be a monk or whatever. There is a place in Kentucky, you might know where I'm talking about. It's west of Lexington, south of Louisville. It's in that same area, Bardstown, where my old Kentucky home is. There's a place called Abbey of Gethsemane, and I don't know much about them, but some guy that was fairly well-known, I think the Catholic Church, Thomas Merton, lived there for a while or something. Are you guys familiar with him?
No, I've not heard of that, no.
I'm not Catholic, so I don't know much about it, but he was some sort of Trappist monk or something, but he was from Europe, but I think he lived in, it's in Bardstown, like I said, it's west of Lexington, south of Louisville, you know, where you always hear the sun shines bright on old Kentucky home. It's in that part of Kentucky there. But anyway, but let me tell you one other thing, and I mentioned this on Jim Fetzer's show earlier today, and also on this show with, what's his name, Robbie and 9000 or whatever his name is, I mentioned with this last night that there is big time conspiracy theory. J.D. Vance either knocked off or helped knock off the Pope. And I think that's a bunch of crap myself, but what do you all think about that?
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous to me, like that he's that J.D. Vance is the Antichrist, and that he went to visit and his breath was able to kill the Pope as a poison or something. Yeah.
Oh, you heard that. Okay. Yeah. And you know what's weird? The part of Kentucky I live in, he's not only about a couple of counties from where I live at. Well, actually, he was from Middletown, Ohio, between Cincinnati and Dayton, but he spent part of his childhood and biggest part of his summers in a place called Jackson, Kentucky, Breathitt County in the eastern part of Kentucky, and there is a weird coincidence here. Now, area code in this end of Kentucky is 606. Most, not all, the phone numbers in Breathitt County are 666. I'm not joking.
You're talking about Vance, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about Vance, the same county that he partially grew up in, and Breathitt County, Kentucky.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, Bill, and always good to hear from you. And, again, we have a lot of calls trying to go through here. Charlie in Florida. Charlie, welcome.
Hey, can you hear me? Yeah, there I am. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Okay, just real quick here, Luke 11:23. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. Okay.
Okay. Well, Graham, I stand corrected. I apologize, Graham.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. I mean, no, it's perfect, right? I wouldn't know. I had to look it up.
I was thinking about all the possibilities.
Say to Joe, who called in earlier, that because he always talks about the Catholic with Putin being a Catholic. There is a confessor. I found out that Putin takes a confessor priest with him everywhere he goes. If he goes overseas, he takes them with him. If he goes on any trips, he takes them with him. And he does confession almost once every day. So I thought Joe would like to know that.
The Russian troops get prayers every day and get sprinkled with holy water. There's bishops, there's Orthodox bishops at the front line.
Yeah, and Thomas Merton did live in there in Bardstown near that I can't think of the name of that monastery, but Thomas Merton was assassinated. He wanted to bring an end to the Vietnam War, and they believe he was assassinated in Thailand. He went over there to speak, and they found him dead. It's been a big controversy ever since.
Wow,
Thomas Merton.
Okay. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, and I guess the only other thing I have to say is that they're going to screw it up over there, and Trump is out. I think Trump is going for the minerals. I don't know why else he would be trying to, you know, continue these peace talks or whatever. Instead of just stopping the money and letting it go, there's something else going on here, and it doesn't sound right. Trump's starting to actually look weak in all this. He needs to shut the hell up and let Putin actually go ahead and win this war and get it over with, you know. But there's some other reason. There's something else going on. And I think you're right, Graham. I think it has to do with the minerals.
Yes.
I think he's trying to save BlackRock some money, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, no, thanks for all that input, Charlie. Appreciate your call as always, sir.
Yes, thank you.
All right, have a great night. We have Paul in New Jersey. Paul, welcome, and what's on your mind?
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
Hey, hello.
If we get a new pope, let's hope he's a hardcore, like, right-wing, anti-Semite-mafia guy. You know what I mean? Somebody who really, because think of it, this is the problem of Catholicism. I mean, historically, they've had more money, or at least a lot of money, and they could have used this to leverage and use against, to take the money of the Jews systematically and make it ongoing mafia racket. And, and really stand up for Gentile interests as a, you know, like a religious mafia where they're connected and they're working in concert for the good of the white race. Of course, Catholicism is not so into racial purity, that's for sure. But now the problem with the current pope who just passed is he, of course, was not critical enough about Israel for my taste, or at least using it as a leverage against the Jews to shake them down for money, right? And so it's sad that we can only hope the next guy who comes in is going to use Catholicism as a bulwark against Judaism. And that's really what it should be about, you know, to a large extent. And of course, not wanting migrants in Europe, you know, right? And not being against racism. Right? Because didn't he make racism a sin a while ago? Remember that? Francis, remember that?
Listen, the Pope had a lot to say about Gaza, but it never made the news.
Yeah. Well,
so,
yeah, by the way,
the media was throttling the truth. They were choking the truth. As usual.
But so in a sense, if you're onward Christian soldiers fighting against Jews, then I'm with you. But if you're just going to stand back as a religion and let Jews run everything, then what good is it? It's a failure. And so that's why Judaism is superior to Christianity, obviously. It's the dominant, because they dominate the Christians. And the Christians take it, run around, afraid of being anti-Semites and doing about anything about deposing Jewish power and standing up for Christians.
Well, yeah, but there's a certain amount of passivity in Christianity, isn't there? It's not about fighting, unless it's in a spiritual sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
so it doesn't stand up for people, in that sense. It just lets the Jews run wild and takes it. And by the way, ignoring certain teachings in the Bible, because the Bible says you're supposed to favor other Christians. It does say that in I think, Timothy or one of the books, about shunning unbelievers.
The thing is, though, it's not all black and white. Orthodox Jews believe that they shouldn't even be in Israel. They should still be scattered amongst all the nations.
Yeah, but I think we should be scattering them and sweeping them back to one place. That's what I think.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your input. But it's totally biblical that they'll be scattered. Because of their stubbornness, they'll be scattered among every nation in the world. And the Orthodox Jews believe that that's where they should be. They should not be in Israel. They should still be scattered because they're still under God's judgment. That's what the ultra-Orthodox Jews believe. They're not all the same. They're not all Zionists. We've got a tendency, it's human nature, we've got a tendency to oversimplify things.
Yeah, I will say this, though. I mean, if the Catholic Church would actually be Catholic, it would automatically be, by default, be, in quotes, anti-Semitism. It would be anti-Judaism, because Judaism is anti-Christ and anti-Christian. So if the Catholic Church, and it also must be said that what we're experiencing now in Christianity generally, and including in Catholicism,
Seems like we lost Paul.
Paul seemed to get cut off. Yeah, yeah. The thing is, Paul, it's not, like I say, it's a complex situation. There's a huge amount of Christian Jews. There's millions of Jews that are Christian, and there's also a Christian revival going on within Jewish communities. I don't know if you were aware of that or not. It's not just in Iran where there's a huge Christian revival. It's swept right across Israel. The Jewish synagogues are losing members right, left, and center. People are turning to Christ. And I don't mean one or two. I mean waves of people, whole families, whole clans, turning back to Christ. That's what's happening. It's not all simple. They're not all one thing or another. It's a multifaceted situation.
Well, that was a great show. Hey, thank you, Graham. I really appreciate it. And we'll do this again soon, sir. And thank you to Paul as well. I lost his connection the last second there. Thank you to all the callers. Please support RBN. You can call to donate 800-724-2719 so that we will speak again soon. And until next time, transcend the construct. Regards.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.